The following podcast is intended for a mature audience. Listener discretion is advised. Welcome, dear listener, to Echoes of Escheaton, a solo play Degenesis podcast that lets the dice rolls tell the story. You'll find the gripping narratives in this apocalyptic setting unfold before your very ears. You'll hear stories of loss and injustice, redemption and hope. A miasma of gloom drifts across the barren wastes, while nightmarish beasts roam and terrorize cities and settlements. Only mankind's inexhaustible will to survive offers the faintest glimmer of hope on the horizon. The echoing shades of the bygone peoples lingers on the wind and on the lips of survivors in this hell on earth. What stories will they tell? Metal-banded wagon wheels crashed and rolled through divots in the worn path, causing small tidal waves to slosh back and forth within the water tank. Etta, Kiefer, and Sudo walked in the back of the wagon train next to Sergeant Nielsen, acting as a rear guard. Idle chatter from further up the line floated above the laborers, walking two people abreast. I'm going to roll a perception here to see if there's anything interesting as far as tidbits of conversation that the party might pick up. They aren't actively listening for anything, but it could add some interesting conversational flavor, and depending on the roles, could shed some more light on Helvetic activity in the area. Kiefer, for his part, is more interested to know what kinds of threats this area is facing from the sepsis. With a trigger and two successes on his roll, his ears perk up when he hears this.
Feels like the blind leading the blind, and we could all be infected for fuck's sake. The spores in the air. They made Jonas start acting strange just last week, but it's almost like he lost all his good senses overnight. He wandered off and gets gutted and eaten by a leperos. There's bound to be more out there.
Shh, pipe down. You want those strangers to hear every damn thing?
I think Kiefer would deduce that things have been uneasy for a while in Exil, and the Helvetics are getting out while the getting is good. It's not a stretch to think that these laborers may have even been canaries in a coal mine, so to speak, but he only has his gut instincts to trust on that one. Etta doesn't hear much useful info from the drivel and curses of the laborers, but she does opt to try and converse with Sergeant Nielsen for a time. He reveals his first name as Matthias, Franken-born and recruited at 15, standard practice of Helvetic recruitment. He seemed willing to chat, despite his grave appearance.
And you've been stationed here for 2 months?
Off and on. Gets harder and harder to come back every time.
His replies remained short as he continually swept his eyes back and forth, scanning small rises across the landscape on either side of the caravan. Etta chewed over how she should break the ice in her mind.
Maybe he's keen on sharing more related to that lieutenant of his.
Etta is going to roll Charisma plus Expression to try and eke out a bit more dialogue and perhaps foster some familiarity with the sergeant. Oof, but with 4 ones on the roll, she gets stonewalled, not really picking the best words to describe his commanding officer.
Multiple deployments can wear you down. I'm sure that Lieutenant Borum becomes an even bigger jack-off each deployment. He's only in it for the money, obviously.
Helvetics are harder than coffin nails. I'll ask you to keep your loose tongue behind your teeth, Judge. You know nothing of our struggles here in the wilds, or what a commanding officer orders you. I mean, what he's prepared to do.
The biting commentary took Etta by surprise, although it probably shouldn't have. She had not been impeccable with her word choice, and the conversation dithered further down the trail. A crimson sunset pierced a thin shroud of dust, reminding all the travelers of the dangers and fear carried across the winds. It filled the lungs of everyone with each breath. Darkness fell, and with the aid of several e-torch poles staked in the dirt, a camp was laid out. Many laborers broke into smaller groups. Some were families. Others were simply elders that had bonded over their lengthy servitude at the behest of the Alpine Military Force. All of them seemed reluctant to interact with the new faces that had marched into Exil a half day earlier. Bluish buzz light from the E-torches cascaded across the milky white armor plating of the Helvetics during their night watch, making them appear as ghostly beacons patrolling the perimeter. Sergeant Nilsson and Lieutenant Boren spared no words on their patrol, staying on high alert. Their fingers were glued to their trigger guards, ready and willing to open fire on whatever emerged from the silent darkness. Around the campfires, a simple broth was served into wooden and metal bowls along with a square of hardened bread. The loaf softened when placed in the bottom of the bowl and helped to sop up the remaining juices. The party was given a portion as well by a begrudging cook, and although the rations lacked any sort of culinary flair, it was hearty enough to stave off rumbling bellies, for the night at least. As the campfires dimmed, Sudo could hear tiny blubbering sobs again nearest the water tank cart. Whimpers and pleas for Papa fell amidst the noise of soft snoring and combat boots shuffling around the sleeping caravan. She pounded out a note on her digipad's hard drive.
Informed the cluster about enlistment possibilities near the Franken border. Mimetic integration for the potential will be easy to administer.
Suda read the note out loud in her head. Recruitment saved her from destruction, so why not another? Etta stirred just before sunrise to feed Petra, who was nibbling on her leather coat sleeve.
You may have lost your hearing, but that appetite is still there.
She patted his haunches warmly as the creature munched loose hay and dried grass by the fistful. She looked out across the horizon and saw Lieutenant Boren and Sergeant Nilsson still patrolling. They paced side by side toward camp as Boren gestured sharply at Nilsson. The Helvetic officer punctuated some of what he had said with strikes on Nilsson's breastplate and shoulder pauldron armor. The gestures didn't have a friendly air to them, at least not from what Etta saw in the waning rays of the sunrise.
I know what a commanding officer dressing down looks like. Best to leave Matthias alone until Mulhouse,
she said, rubbing the crest of Petra's head. Her horse looked up with a mouth full of hay, big brown eyes shimmering. Etta put her tongue in her bottom lip, poking it out like Protector Kant's mouthful of tobacco, and spit on the ground in front of Petra.
Yeah, that's the one.
At daybreak, everyone was roused from their slumber by Boren and Nilsson. They kicked sleeping bags open and batted the butts of their rifle stocks on plastic and wood. Laborers were groggy-eyed and stiff, but on time to fall into formation to complete the last leg of their journey. Noon came and went when Sergeant Nilsson was called up from the rear to the front via a fuzzy radio bark. A full halt was called from the top of the caravan. Wagons, hooves, and feet all shuffled to a stop. Kiefer and Etta craned their necks to see the Helvetics up top, squatted down and drawing hastily in the dirt with sticks. Lieutenant Boren stood up and motioned his whole arm down the line from front to back.
Seems urgent. Prepare to hustle,
Etta relayed to Kiefer and Sudo. Sergeant Nilsson looked some of the elders in the eyes as he spoke to them, but did not break stride as he made his way backwards. The full command became clearer with each few people that he passed.
Double time. Checkpoint is closing early. Lighten your loads and move. Double time. Checkpoint is closing early. Lighten your loads and move. Double time.
He jogged another 24 meters beyond the party, pulling a pair of binoculars from his hip pouch. A small boulder allowed him an additional few feet of elevation as he scanned. He lowered the binoculars, stowed them, and broke into a faster jog, disappearing out of sight behind a small hill. Kiefer and Sudo have small insights on occasion, but are otherwise rigid in their interactions with other people. So I'm going to give Etta one more expression roll to try and divine any more information from this new command being passed down the line. However, due to her blunder earlier, the difficulty is getting bumped up. Difficulty, 2 successes. Action number, 6 dice. There was something in Sergeant Nilsson's curt expression simply passing along the orders. There was a wavering in his voice that betrayed an otherwise calm demeanor. Something was wrong. but she wasn't in the best position to ask follow-up questions, and ushered Petra further along the path with a quickened pace. I'll rule here that it was enough of a judge's intuition that she would double-check the load of her flintlock pistol, making sure the wad and powder inside the breech were fit to fire at a moment's notice.
Are you looking for a D&D podcast with a dark side? Something more like Game of Thrones and less like Monty Python? Tale of the Manticore is part dark fantasy audio drama, part solo D&D RPG. There's no plot armor here. The dice make all the important decisions. Join me as I resurrect the excitement, wonder, and emotion of old-school D&D. Made for a mature audience, Tale of the Manticore is both a fiction and a game. It's the story where chaos rolls.
After rounding another lengthy bend in the road, the path descends sharply after another kilometer, dropping elevation by 30 or so meters. As the front of the caravan disappeared below the crest of the hill, it offered enough of a vantage for the rear party members to gaze down at the Mulhouse checkpoint in its full magnitude. Towering vertical beams rose to meet the top of the hill, cast into the ground below with trapezoidal concrete collars. A network of tautly fastened blue tarps stretched wide over the expanse between each beam, providing shade over the catwalks and firing perches interspersed across the tops of the stratospheric poles. A half dozen Helvetic soldiers on stands trained their trailblazer rifles to assess threats over the top of the hill or to issue warning shots on the swelling mass of people far below. A thick and unbending brick and mortar wall spanned the width of the narrowing trail, creating a firm choke point. It was built solidly into the side of a tall cliff on the left side, with a sheer 20-meter face, and terminated in a dead drop off the other right side of the cliff, some 30 meters down into a flat gully. The width of the wall was divided into five traffic lanes, each lined with crossed steel girders laced with barbed wire. They erupted from the earth like some great beast's fangs, ready to shred and maim any who dare stray too far from the lanes leading to the square entry spaces ahead. The largest central lane was closed off and contained 12 battalions, one of whom was astride an ebony steed, draped in a black hooded cloak. The battalion and horse stood in front of two mammoth spherical water tanks, etched with age, paint peeling from the red eight-pointed cross adorning the fronts. Patient travelers awaited their turn to be funneled into each lane. They clutched their shoulder bags and gunny sacks tightly to their chests after receiving a brief pat-down by the battalions, their bug-eyed gas masks glaring at each passerby. A fine mist drizzled down on heads and bodies from skinny piping attached to the central water tank on either side. A medicinal smell drifted uphill and burned inside the nostrils of the approaching caravan. The decontaminant solution that drizzled down singed uncovered skin with slight chemical burns. Yet another price to pay for keeping the travel roads surrounding the Alpine Fortress as spore-free as possible. Lieutenant Boren's laborers were only 200 meters from the beginning of the razor wire and traffic lanes when a muffled boom cascaded from around the bend. Two dozen heads flinched to look behind from where the sound came. A phosphorus white and gold flare arched over the bend beyond the top of the hill, flickering like another miniature sun against the static sky. There were concerned gasps and murmurs that rolled across the caravan, but Lieutenant Boren's voice rose above it all.
Keep in formation, down the hill in double file. Move your asses.
Spare equipment and loose sundries hit the ground and caused a brief clatter as Borkin and Franken laborers jogged down the hill. The mood had shifted from concern to panic as folks began racing past each other, elbowing and tripping others to get to the front of the line. The guards at the entrances buffeted them as they rushed through the mist and aggressively clambered over each other to get inside the brick and mortar construct. Kiefer gazed up to see a general alarm being mustered in the catwalks above and by the famulancers down below. The splayers that were stuck in the dirt were brought to bear by their battalion masters as they filed into a phalanx formation. Kiefer looked over at Etta and Sudo, his eyes wide and jaw tense.
Get a move on. Keep your knees bent and your arms up in the crowd.
Etta grabbed Sudo's unbroken arm, breaking her attention on the fading flare at the skyline.
Stay with me, Sudo. You're in my back pocket. Understand?
Sudo nodded fervently and raced down the hill alongside Etta, who smacked Petra on the rump to spur him along with haste. Kiefer was hot on their heels. Dozens of bodies pressed together tightly in the distressed crowd. A klaxon whirred to life as another flare boomed directly above the top of the cliff overlook. Distressed cries and angry yells to be let in came from the scared crowd regarding the nameless fear behind them. The central lane heaved inward, but held firm by compressed flesh. Those on the side of the line had their skin punctured and ripped from the steel girders and razor wire biting at them. Etta and Sudo had reached the bottom of the hill, and the judge tried her best to keep herself and the chronicler from being crushed inside the huddled masses, now a full mob of almost 50 travelers. She tried to keep calm and take in the calamity surrounding her. The lone figure on the horse towered above everyone, but made no motion to pacify the fray. They sat motionless, their grim steed perfectly composed under thick rubber covering on their neck and muzzle, like a visage of death waiting patiently for his time to reap. The crack of gunfire echoed through the walls of the gully below, and Etta whipped around to see Sergeant Nilsson break the hilltop in a full sprint. He held the trailblazer by its middle as he furiously pumped his arms. He was running from something too, and what she saw next filled her with abject terror. Thundering footsteps shook the ground as waves upon waves of dirty, war-painted faces dressed in rags and wielding crude-looking weapons washed over the top of the hill in droves. The first rifle reports rang out from the tower stands above, and the invader bodies began dropping and plummeting down the hill. Leperos savages were descending upon the checkpoint in the dozens and closing the distance fast. The guards at the entrances kept beating travelers back, only accepting one or two at a time after they'd been held underneath a dripping spray nozzle for a long enough period. Etta's arm muscles strained. She couldn't keep a hand on Petra's bridle and Sudo at the same time anymore. It was just too much. Petra had already begun to shake and buck, sensing the extreme tension behind him. It was more dangerous for her to try and wrangle him in this frenzy. Etta choked back frustration and sadness. She butted Petra's head against hers and ran a hand down his muzzle sweetly, before loosing the bridle and giving the medical trunk a sturdy kick to tip it over, snapping the thin axle and freeing the horse from its load. She smacked his rear haunch.
Yeah!
The gate horse bolted as fast as his legs would carry him in the direction of the encroaching savage horde, knocking over two with his bulk and trampling a third before being lost in the sea of pale, stigma-ridden bodies. Sudo stayed adjacent to Etta and made herself as small as she could. She kept her knees bent like Kiefer instructed, rolling with the crowd and keeping her feet under her to avoid being trampled. She heard a distinct cry in the mayhem, a tiny girl's voice she'd heard the night before, weeping at the campsite. The chronicler could see her scrunched up between the stampeding travelers.
Papa! Papa!
She screamed. Miraculously, the girl hadn't been swept away. Yet. A jolt ran down Sudo's spine, and the world seemed to slow as an echo filled her head.
Nobody wants you, Abigail. Nobody loves you, Abigail.
I've been waiting to see what kind of stressors would bring up Sudo's haunted memories, and this seems like a good a time as any. As written, the tiny girl is just background noise that I came up with, but I think it could be an amazing bit of faded storytelling, so I'll let the dice decide. I'm going to roll instinct plus empathy to determine if Sudo can pierce the void of her mind, but the difficulty gets bumped up due to her mimetic conditioning. Difficulty, 2 successes. Action number, 3 dice.
Reset, Sudo-19. Protect the apparatus.
Priority, Sudo-19 survival. Judge protects for the mission. Priority, Sudo-19 survival. Judge protects for the mission.
Pseudo, snap out of it. Where's Kiefer?
Etta yelled in her ear. Pseudo's eye cut back and forth to find the girl she had heard, but there was no sign of her. Shots from the Tower Overwatch continued in the pandemonium, even as more villainous, primer-controlled bodies washed over the hill. The Leperos were almost upon them. They were close enough now for frightened travelers to see blades grafted onto skin, weeping sores leaking from tumorous growth, and filed down canines biting at the air.
Where's Kiefer?
Etta cried and looked around, all while still trying to muscle her way through the narrow lanes with Pseudo. She could start to feel the mist on her face and clothes, and it burned her cheeks. It felt as though she was stepping through a portal to hell, and it made her want to retch. Her vision blurred, and she heard ringing in her ears. The Leperos were upon them. But she toughs through it and rights herself, drawing her pistol from its holster and taking aim at a bruiser, dreadlocks flapping and twin blades held menacingly at his side, ready to skewer anyone in his path. Etta breathes out and sights him in.
Always outnumbered, never outgunned. Come on then, you bastards.
A remarkable shot. A whiff of sulfur and white smoke fills the air as the flintlock pistol empties its spiked lead and strikes the savage in the cheek, blowing out the back of his neck. He falls, dead, and trips up another Leperos directly behind him.
Kiefer,
Etta moaned, looking frantically across the melee. She whirled around to see the tipped trunk now fully open on the ground. Its foam inserts had been completely removed, and its vials of panaceas, antibiotics, and medical distillate were strewn across the dirt. Her eyes traced a chaotic path along the wreckage, finally landing on Kiefer, some 8 meters away. He was wearing a small metallic backpack with thick-gauged hoses flowing from the sides and connected to a handheld nozzle. The nozzle had a pistol grip and trigger guard, not unlike Etta's flintlock pistol or the Helvetic Trailblazer. But instead of a flint or an ammo counter, the nozzle rifle featured pressure gauges and flanges that Kiefer flicked and turned in rapid succession. This battalion bared his teeth like a wild Gendo and took a wide stance with his boots dug in. Several Leperos veered off to assault his position, and he leveled the nozzle in their direction. Etta hesitated, not sure if she should try to quickly clean and reload her pistol or run in to help him fend off the attackers. She barely had enough time to even curse Kiefer's brazen attempt to draw away the savages before she saw a concentrated burst of yellowish spray issue forth in a wide jet from the conical nozzle in his hands. Kiefer's fungicide rifle directed a stream of the pressurized liquid like a hose, showering the savages in noxious liquid and fumes. As soon as the fluid made contact with the attacker's bare skin, they halted in their tracks, screaming and wailing. They swatted blindly at the air, desperately trying to rid themselves of the vile fluid burning holes in their flesh. Chemical smoke poured from their bodies, and they hacked and sputtered violently, vomiting blood. The telltale fuzzy mucus followed after, leaking from any and every pore across the sinews of muscle, which turned a sickly gray color and began to sag on their bones. A pack of four Famulancers broke from the main phalanx and enveloped Kiefer in a tight group, their splayers thrusting out with deadly precision. The metal shears at the end snapped open and grabbed Leperos' arms, chests, and necks before they were clamped shut again with the hydraulic actuators. Limbs and heads fell to the ground, grasping harmlessly at the air as the remaining nerves fueled by the sepsis fired one last time. The heat of battle was at full tilt, punctuated by random shots from the soldier's overwatch in the canopy above. Kiefer backpedaled out of the fray and whipped around to spot Etta and Pseudo standing helplessly amidst the carnage.
Judge and Chronicler, they are clean, on my vow. Take them inside,
he roared at the Helvetic guards, pointing directly at Etta and Pseudo. The ladies heard pounding hooves and a muffled neigh cut through the battle behind them, and they turned to see the Black Rider charge from behind across the central barricade. The beast sailed over the barbed wire, and his deathly master drew a blade from atop his saddle scabbard. He cleaved a Leperos in two from the shoulder down upon landing, and in his free hand drew a repeating pistol. The battalion commando swung his leg over the side and dropped down, As he landed, bullets and steel cut a swath of Leporos, and the commando marched forward. Etta looked across and locked eyes with Kiefer. She could see a look of grit and fury flash across his stony features. Her throat swelled. Kiefer returned the glance, his eyes piercing into Etta's, before manning his fungicide rifle yet again. He shirked off an attacker, who screamed a fierce battle cry and wielded a nasty-looking sickle. The terrifying shriek was stopped short with a concentrated blast of caustic spray, melting the Leprosa's jaw clean off its face. His battalion bravery had a name, and it was Kiefer Stukov. Defenseless travelers were pummeled and stabbed, fueled by the otherworldly bloodlust of the Leporos. Etta raised her pistol to bludgeon a female savage who thrust a knife into another woman's back, but she was thrown off balance by a yank at her coat collar. She instinctively grabbed the sleeve of Pseudo, who was ducking and weaving spiked gauntlets, bludgeoning clubs, and other manner of cruel weaponry. A rifle shot popped behind their ears as they stumbled forward with their unidentified Helvetic savior. And Etta briefly saw a gaping hole in the knife wielder's chest blooming with mucus and blood. The victim was already dead at her feet, collapsing into a pile of growing corpses. The crowd flinched again at the shot, allowing the trio to muscle through to the front of the line and past the rain of the sprinklers, now mixing in with pools of blood in the dirt. The entryway of the Mulhall's checkpoint wall was sparsely lit as the women crashed inside on top of each other, thrown to the ground by their own momentum. Etta slid into the brick wall, busting her head against stone and knocking herself out cold. Pseudo looked up from her hands and knees to see the last bit of graying daylight washed out in a final few muzzle flashes from a trailblazer before the soldier pulled another one of their brethren inside and wrenched the roll-top door down along its hinged tracks. The metal slammed down to block the entryway, covering all those inside in darkness. Thanks for listening to this episode of Echoes of Eschaton. I love engaging with my listeners on Twitter at Echoes of Eschaton and via email at echoesofeschaton@gmail.com. So reach out and say hello. I love asking questions on the Spotify app. To see what the question or poll of the week is, tap the episode details on your Spotify mobile app and scroll down to the Q&A section. If you'd like to help the show, there are several ways to do so. You can share it with a friend that loves post-apocalyptic stories, like and retweet show announcements on Twitter, and consider leaving a rating on your pod fetcher of choice. Are you hungry for even more Degenesis content? You can visit the Discord community at discord.gg/Degenesis. Until next time.